Hi, Astrid. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Peter.
We were doing APIs, OR APIs with Quanto Hub and, on the other project. Wish you were there. We were actually doing federation just now.
Oh, really? Oh, very cool.
Yes.
So.
Hello, Astrid.
I'm Maria.
Oh, Maria. Oh, you're over here now.
Yeah.
I can see Bob Smith as well.
Hi,
Peter.
Hi, Bob. Jessica is on the chat.
Hello, all. It is Bob. I
can see Kevin Tyson. We're waiting for our host. Amanda is joining us.
Yes.
In the call. Is it two people on one, Kevin Tyson on the chat who is not on the call, and there was an M. Gilmore who is not on the chat anymore. More on the call.
Greetings, Kevin Tyson here. Is this the Fibo Hackathon?
Yes. Hi, Kevin.
Greetings. Is that Peter?
Yes, it's Peter. A whole bunch of us here. We can see you on the chat as well.
Oh, great.
Yes. Is M. Gilmore with you?
Oh, yes, I'm here.
Hi, Mike.
Good day, Dan. Mark Hastings.
Good day. Good to see you.
Jacobus here as well.
Hi, Jacobus. How are you?
Hello, fine. Thank you.
I'm just firing up all the various things.
Okay. If everyone tries to be at both places, Paul and on the in the chat room, that would be great. And also, please use your real name because some of us have not had the chance to meet or work together before.
Yeah.
What a crowd.
Good.
I see 10 people on the call already. There are a couple aren't on the chat yet. So yours, like, however you want to get us started.
Okay. So for the slides, I'm on GoToMeeting. Four of you there so far. I have Astrid, Kevin, and Max on the GoToMeeting. When you're going to go to meeting, you'll need to click telephone, where it says telephone or mic and speakers, because we're using the Ontwell fridge for sound until we get past the kickoff session, and then we'll pick that through to mic and speakers. So you should have a link to the GoToMeeting. It's on link from the Wiki page, so the details should be there. Let's see who's not yet in GoToMeeting. Maria, Bob, Francesca, might be in picking in. If you want to go to this, or you can follow the slides locally if you prefer. I'll just simply be going through the slides. So, it might be easier for some.
Mike, would I go to meeting details then? Because I don't have them.
Yeah, paste it onto the chat, if you please, Mike.
Sure, let me do that. The GoToMeeting is this one. And it has telephone details as well, which are in the wiki page. But let me just paste the GoToMeeting thing into the chat. Okay. and from the sort of wiki page, there should also be details of that. So yeah, on the HCO3 wiki page where it says item 3, we'll use those meetings. It took through to that with a list of phone numbers if you, that's for the later session anyway, you don't need that at this point, but for the screen sharing, you should have that link now. I think nearly everybody's there now. Let me see if there's anybody missing. So I've got Astrid, Kevin, Maria, Max, and Mike.
Installing.
It takes about 2 minutes if you've not installed it before. So. Okay. So I'll just give a couple of minutes for people to.
I'm in.
Ah, you're in. I think. Is there anybody that's not in? I think everybody seems to be.
Yeah, in. Only me, I guess. I can't find the link. Can't find the link.
Are you in the chat room?
I'm in the Summit Hackathon room.
Ah, right. So there's another. And that reminds me, I'm supposed to go to that and post that we're starting. Just give me a moment while I so there's the main Summit Hackathon room, and then there's a HCO3 room. So if you go to the wiki page Ontology Summit 2013 Hackathon Clinic Cybo Oquare, there's a link at the top there through to the main thing, which has that's the main chat room, which I need to go to and I'll post
it to the
where is it? Yeah,
click on this. The event schedule.
Event schedule, thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So the main chat room, which Jacobus is in, is this one. I'll just open that.
Oh, okay. I see it.
And I can post a link in there. Chat room at. And that.
I'm in. Thank you.
Right, I've posted the link to this chat in the other one, and in this chat is the link to go to meeting.
Yeah.
I think everybody is in. Is anybody not in go to meeting that's on this telephone call? I think we're all here.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, so, alright, so welcome to the launch of our clinic for FIBO and OOPS and OQUARE and Onto QA and any other tools and techniques that happen along. The aim of this, I'm just going to go through some basic slides, but feel free to jump in with questions and things. I haven't structured the day as such. I've got an idea of what we're going to be following, and I'll cover that in the slides. And we'll use this session to really get things started and work out our kind of working routine and so on, and get everybody up to page of whatever you want to do. If you can mute your phone locally if you're not speaking, just in case you've got kitchen noises, and that would be wonderful.
Yep, maybe I will mute everyone and you sort of unmute yourself, right? All right, everyone is muted. So now if you need to speak, you have to do a *7 mic first. Bennett. Yeah.
Hi, how's that?
We can hear you now.
Wonderful. Hi, everyone. So, yes, on this system, if you need to speak, you... click *7 and then your line will be unmuted. Do feel free to chip in at any point. Great. Welcome, everyone. It's going to be an exciting day. So let me just, without waiting anymore, just describe what we're doing, who some of the collaborators are. I'll give each of them a chance to say hello and give a little description of what they're bringing to the table. Then we'll look at what are the ontologies that we're looking at today, what our objectives are, and what I see as some of the deliverables, both the short-term deliverables in terms of what we want to come out with at the end of today or tomorrow if necessary, when we feel we've done what we're doing here, and also some longer-term deliverables in that I'm seeing this as being the start of figuring out some more formal process towards the development of FIDO specifications. I've just remembered that I also promised to record this on GoToMeeting. Peter, you record these anyway, don't you, at your end? Or
I'm recording just the voice. I don't know whether when you say record, you record the screen.
Right.
Yeah,
well.
You go ahead.
Yep, okay. So I'm starting
to... unless request, I have no plans to publish the recording.
Right, okay.
So, but if you request, like Project O2, it requests that I publish that.
Dennis definitely asked if I was recording this, so I said yes, because he's on a plane at the moment. So... I'm starting recording now, so everybody's aware. Right, hi everyone. Welcome to the FIBO, OCLAIR, Onto QA and others clinic. This is Saturday the 13th of April 2013. So I'm just going to run through some background notes and give people a chance to get to know each other and start to set up what our working pattern is for today, and that will be for the next hour and three quarters, and then we'll take a short break, and then we'll start the work in earnest. So, what basically are we aiming to do? So, there's really a couple of things that we're aiming to achieve with this. So the FIBO, this is the Financial Industry Business Ontology, which, as the name suggests, is a business ontology, an ontology developed for the business terms and definitions and so on in the financial industry. We actually have two styles of ontology, and we want to identify what are the relevant quality measures for each of those. I'll describe those in a little more detail in a moment, but basically we have a business conceptual ontology which captures all of the business terms that the industry cares about, with definitions and so on. And then because that is necessarily too large to create a reasoning-based application, and because the conceptual model explicitly doesn't include the application constraints of any application, including semantic applications, we have the the idea to create a number of operational ontologies, of which we have a few prototypes that have been worked on already, that are optimized for use in semantic reasoning and semantic querying applications. So we need to address each of those kinds of ontology in terms of what are the quality measures that should be applied to them, work out how to bake those measures into a methodology and a life cycle for development and maintenance, particularly of the standards, which is the conceptual ontology, and also how to derive operational ontologies and how to validate those against their requirements, which includes the requirements of adequately reflecting the business semantics in the conceptual ontologies, of course. Then we have OOPS, which is the ontology pitfall scanner, where we want to be able to catalogue what are the kinds of pitfalls we want to look for in the business conceptual ontologies, and so on. And this should be on this page as well, but the OCLAIR quality framework, which is our starting point for figuring out what are the quality measures that can be applied to ontology, which of them should apply to a conceptual ontology, how each of those should be applied, and then how to use the OOPS and other tools to formally evaluates the ontologies against those quality parameters that you've...
Could I ask a question before you leave that slide?
Yes, please do.
I've been using FIBO intensively for the last few weeks, but in a manner that kind of cuts across those two concerns.
Oh.
We've converted, you know, with your help and the help of the several people in both the OMG and the EDMC, we have converted FIBO plus the semantic repository into a STAS vocabulary.
Yep.
And we're trying to use these as inputs to coming up with a unified vocabulary across a back and middle office in an investment bank.
Yep.
For us, the it's a UML shop. They're not doing semantic applications.
Mm-hmm.
They're used to looking at it as a logical level and an implementation level, and we need to be able to make the terminology defined in both FIBO and the semantic repository relevant to both groups of people, because we're iteratively converging on both a technology base and a terminology base. So I'm wondering, you know, how, this is kind of orthogonal to the way that you split it up between, you know, the business conceptual ontology and the operational ontology. I guess for me, the operational ontology is a fully fleshed out UML model that I have to relate to.
Right. So that's interesting. And this is exactly the sort of thing I want to flesh out in this this clinic. An operational ontology, as we defined it here, is an operational OWL ontology in RDF OWL that you would run up in Protégé and do reasoning applications on. So from a life cycle or methodology point of view, the way I've been framing it here, and I do think we can fine-tune this a lot in terms of what you're all talking about, but the conceptual ontology lives at the level of any conceptual model, such as a business process model or a use case catalog or requirement specification, but all of those artifacts which independently define the business view of things without reference to how the solution is to be implemented, is all separate from, even if you've got a very spiral development in which these things are very closely connected, it's a separate concern from any design. So design would be a logical model. Ontologies are slightly different because there isn't a logical model in ontology, but there's, if you like, you go straight to the physical model of the application using RDFL. But a UML logical data model represents a design. An operational ontology is something like a design in that you start to apply application constraints such as DL-safe reasoning rules, such as ensuring that it can be reasoned over in a reasonably bounded length of time and so on. So when you start to apply the constraints of an application onto that business terminology to actually deliver some physical result, then you're going from conceptual to operational. So in that sense, the operational ontologies are equivalent to, but not the same as, a UML logical data model. Does that square with what you're thinking about?
It does, but in my experience, I've been bumping up against, you know, what feels like the mother of all impedance mismatches in that, I have multiple levels of abstraction, you know, in our existing modeling environment, forgetting, you know, FIBO and the OWL. We have conceptual models that include, capability models, and business process models as well.
Yep.
We have a logical model, and then we have, it encompasses both the implementation and the design model, which we're calling software fortresses from, Roger Sessions' work.
Right.
So, I need to inject terminology across all three of those levels, and I can't constrain how, you know, their development environment. So what I've been striving to do is present FIBO and a number of other related ontologies using data so that the actual consumers can decide, pick and choose, and decide which of the concepts they're going to use and how in their part of the stack.
Fantastic. That's a classic use of a conceptual model. And that's what FIBO was designed to be. And I think what you've done with STOS is really enhancing FIBO at the conceptual ontology level. And I'm hoping that if we can, we can actually take a look at some of those anthologies today if you were up to that. But we don't have to, but it would be great if we could, because...
I'd love to, but I don't have the necessary releases.
Right, understood. Okay. So that's quite exciting, that because SCoS allows you to do more conceptual level stuff at the conceptual model level. So I think that's a very exciting direction for what we can do with FIBO as a standard, as a business conceptual ontology. So that's something to look at with interest. Just a quick modeling note, just sort of to address generally, because different people have different perceptions of development life cycles, and of course there's no one right or wrong answer and so on. But I just want to clarify one thing in my mind so that we're all on the same page, which is that from a model-driven development point of view, one often tends to think there's the physical model, and then a more abstract thing than that is the logical model. And so some definitions of conceptual model refer to them as an even more abstract model than that. That's actually not the case, particularly with ontology, because what we're looking at is not a more abstract model of some solution, but a concrete model of the problem. So the questions of abstraction and concreteness and so on apply all over again with perceptual models, just as they do with models of some design solutions, such as a program or a operational ontology or a logical database. I'm sure most people are familiar with that usage, but because the word conceptual is sometimes used in those two different ways, I think it was worth just clarifying that. But our conceptual ontology is not abstract, it's concrete, but what we call the model theory, or the semiotic commitment of the elements in the model, is that each element in a conceptual model or in an ontology stands for something in the real world, whereas each element in a logical data model stands for something in a database, for example. So I just thought I'd mention that as well. Any other points or comments at that level? Because this is all very important stuff. Good. So that's
good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Right. So I think I have a page for each collaborator. Yes, I do. So I'm going to give us a chance to just quickly introduce ourselves, but I'll quickly run through the folks who signed up for this. I apologize, I haven't had time to go back over this slide deck. I see that I'm missing onto a QA from this deck, which I meant to include. So anyway, so it's myself, Mike Bennett, from the Enterprise Data Management Council, and while we're introducing ourselves, I have a number of colleagues from the FIBO community who I'll quickly introduce as well. So we have Jacobus Galuk, Kevin Tyson, Max Gilmore, Bill Freeman. Have I missed anyone from the FIBO industry side of things? So we've all been working on this thing for a number of years now. We've been going for 4 or 5 years developing what was originally called the Semantics Repository, and there's still a website of that name with that material on it. And we've been basically going through term by term and section by section, capturing business terms and definitions using a fairly limited subset of the expressive power of OWLs. So we haven't been doing formal restrictions and things like that. We haven't mostly been defining necessary and sufficient conditions of things. We've been using OWL to describe set theoretic concepts and present them back to a business audience using fairly business-facing diagrams, as business-facing as we can get with the current tooling at least, in order to validate that, because a business conceptual model is not much use if the business can't validate it. And so that's how we've been developing this thing. We can talk more about that later, of course. Some of my colleagues here have been very intimately involved in that work over the years, as well as you've heard, starting to implement that in various ways within their own working environments. Actually, since I haven't got a slide for the FIBO crowd, would this be a good time for me to just get each of the FIBO folks to quickly say hello? You've heard from some of them already, but let's go through in the order that you appear on GoToMeeting. You have to do *7 to unmute. Just say hello and who you're with, and a little bit about what you've been doing with FIBO or what you aim to get out of today's clinic and so on. Jacoba, can you say hello? Star 7?
Hi.
Hi.
Yep. Well, this is Maria, and
Hi, Maria.
Hi. Yeah, I'm part of the OOPS team, and actually, I have to say what I said to you before by email, that actually Mari Carmen was the one supposed to be in this hackathon, because I'm involved in the other one, in HC07.
Uh-huh.
But she can't make it. So I will be like half available or something to support what is needed, or I hope to support you as well.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Ray.
Maybe it's easier to go by the order on the because we don't we cannot see your go to meeting list.
Right, okay, yeah. Okay. So yeah, I just realized that I hadn't put the FIBO folks on the list because I was leaving it wide open here to join, but I just wanted people to have a chance to say hello and introduce themselves.
I can say hello now, I think.
Yes, you can. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I was on mute in Skype and I had to press 07, so you called me. My name is Jacobus Gullick. I worked with Kevin Tyson, that you just heard on the phone as well, in JP Morgan for a while. I'm now working in a completely different sector. I'm working in a fashion news organization where I got the opportunity to build a brand new web publishing system from scratch based on semantic technology, and I'm designing ontologies for the whole fashion world and try to make that work. It's almost delivered now, so it's going to be quite a successful project, I think. FIBO for me was a way to keep in touch with the financial world. So.
Thanks. Kevin, are you there?
Yeah. Let me unmute everyone.
Okay, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, here I am. Greetings. Yeah, unfortunately, I'll be here for the first 90 minutes, but then I'll be popping in and out over the course of the day. As Jacob has mentioned, and as I described before, I'm using FIBO now on a daily basis, not really in the mode that I think it was intended. And so what I'm looking to get out of today is a slight modification in the sorts of use cases we look at, and therefore, in terms of the quality assessment, what would be some of the key measures when you're judging the quality of an ontology in the style where I'm using it, where it's being used as a communications vehicle between people?
Right. Excellent. Thanks. Max, are you there? Just say hi. No. Bill Freeman? Okay, so we'll hear from those guys as the thing progresses. Wonderful, and
I'm here for Samir. Sorry for the delay. I get internet problems.
Hi, is that Samir? Hi, welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Would you like to introduce yourself quickly?
Yes, I'm the author of AntiQA, which is the metric measurement for ontologies. I presented my ideas early on in this online conference, and I'm here to help with anything that might be needed for the ontology to get some metrics out for you guys.
Fantastic, thanks, and welcome to the team.
Also, could you join us on the chat? There's a chat room.
Okay, I think I missed that.
I will post the link to the chat in the GoToMeeting
chat. But he's not on the chat, so he cannot see the chat.
No, I'll post the link to the chat in the GoToMeeting chat facility.
Okay,
I'll appreciate
it.
And he can then click on that to get to the chat.
Okay.
Fantastic. Welcome. And who haven't we heard from? Geraldo or Astrid, are you there?
Astrid is there.
Yeah. Hi, Astrid. Would you like to introduce yourself? Okay, maybe she's muted or on another line or something. Great, so we'll be getting to know each other a bit more during this clinic, but hopefully that's a little overview of who we all are. So,
sorry.
Oh,
hello.
Hi, there you are.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, I'm Ashley. My microphone muted. Sorry.
Okay.
Okay, I'm Ashley. I'm working in the University of Murcia. And in Japan with Geraldo, we are the creators of Aqua. And the idea is to participate with Aqua and to Aqua is a framework for ontology evaluation and has many metrics and characteristics criteria.
And we are here. Excellent. Thank you and
welcome. Mike, good morning, everybody. This is Bill Freeman. I've been involved with SMEX for 10 years or so, and I'm interested in providing solutions to organizations that can leverage FIBO and other semantic technology.
Excellent. Welcome. Good to have you on board. And you've been involved with FIBO for a while as well now, which is lovely. Good. Anybody else that hasn't had a chance to say hello yet? Max, are you there, for example? Okay. So I've got a couple of slides on the OOPS framework and a couple of slides on Aquare. Might have a slide on to QA, but I'll give Samira a chance to describe that in any case. But Maria, do you want to just say a couple of words about the OOPS tool and techniques and so on?
Oh.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah. Well, do you want me to explain in a few words what it is?
Yes, please. Just a few words.
Yeah, so the idea is that we created a catalog that you can see in the bottom. It's pixel catalog. And it contains like 35 pixels for now. And then we saw that the good idea for the people used the catalog was to automate the detection because no one was going to read the papers and the tests and analyze it manually. So we created OOPS that basically has a web interface where you enter an ontology that is here in the left. It has to be an OWL ontology. And it is passed using Jina API. And it runs the detection of 21 pitfalls through the ontology. At the same time, it detects some warnings and some suggestions. And at the end, you get the results in a HTML file. And also now you can use a web service where you get the same results, but in RDF, XML, or XML output. And also through the web services, you can pick or choose which pixel do you want to check. The web interface, through the web interface, you cannot choose yet which ones do you want to check, because maybe you do not agree most of the time. So depending, sometimes the a pitfall could be an error or not, depending on your modeling style or decision. So it is a list of things that we saw in when analyzing around 30 ontologies, and it has to be clear that detecting a pitfall doesn't mean there is an error. The main idea is to point the user to parts of the ontology where they might want to have a look again and check again if they really mean to do that. Sometimes they are actually an error, like for example if you create a property inverse to another property and the domain and ranges doesn't match, it is likely to be an actual error. But sometimes there are just things to have a look and to think again. And that's mainly oops.
Wonderful, thanks. And one thing I was wondering, and I think maybe this slide tells us, is whether the ontology needs to be published online with its URI, and all its URIs actually be referenceable somewhere and all of that, or whether, particularly as part of testing and QA of something that's not released, whether you can input it directly.
Yeah, but you can. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. And how does that deal with imports? Does that look for the imported ontology?
Yes.
Locally or?
Not locally, but if you use the scanner by URI, the ontology has to be available online and the regulation has to work, of course, because otherwise I could not fetch the ontology. But if you don't have it online, you can paste your alt code. The problem there is that if you, in your code, is there any alt imports, those references ontologies has to be online. Because otherwise I cannot fetch them from your file system. Yeah. Another solution could be you load, for example, with Protege all your ontologies and make one single file, merging them. Then you can paste that one in the text.
Okay, good. Well, that's the sort of thing we'll look at when we get to the technical part of this work, because at the moment our ontologies are zipped up in a zip file. Each of them imports several others, but none of those others is online. And so, even in trying to use something like Web Protege, it doesn't load because it always looks for ontologies that are not yet published. And of course, part of developing a good development process for something is not publishing it. you don't want to go live until you've done the QA. So this is going to be very interesting. We're going to have to work out a few little interesting ways. You just described one just then about importing everything to Protege and creating one single file, for example. So this is going to be a very interesting physical hands-on part of this, this workshop. So thank you very much for that introduction.
Just one point. Yes, as you said, your idea is not to publish the ontology. I just want to make clear that OOPS doesn't store any data from the ontology.
Wonderful.
Some people think about that and some people don't. Like, once I submit my ontology, are they going to keep it? And we don't.
Right.
Yeah, we just keep the results. Mm-hmm. And if you enter the URI, we will keep the URI. But in that case, it is because it is available online, so there is no problem. But if you paste the code and use your private code, it will not be stored in our server.
Right, that's very good to know. That also broadens the way in which it can be used as part of the quality assurance of an ontology sometimes before we've even put the licensing terms in the headers and all of that, which we have done, by the way. But that's very useful. Thank you.
While you're discussing this, I asked Maria a question. If an ontology is online but is protected by a password, then could OOPS sort of get past the authentication and evaluate?
I don't think so, because OOPS will try to load the ontology using GINA API, and I don't think any authentication is done there. I guess GINA will get an unexpected HTTP header or something asking for authentication. I don't really know.
But if it is not available for anyone online, I don't think OOPS can load it.
Okay. So maybe for people like Mike, I mean, for Fibre, while they're developing, maybe getting has of is one user interface that might help.
Mm.
Is the tool available for local installation? Because I know it would be impossible for me, for the stuff that we're doing, to, despite your, I'm sure, heartfelt assurances, send you our apologies.
I could provide a Word file, but you have to set it in a Tomcat server or something in your...
Right.
In your the bad thing of that solution is if I change the code, because we will for sure find bugs and problems, your local copy will be out of date.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Cool. Then the next collaborators are Acquire. I'm trying to remember who's here from Acquire at the moment. Have you got Eduardo or Astrid? Of course, yes. Astrid, are you there? Yes, you are. Can you say a few words about Acquire, please? Astrid?
Hello.
Oh, hi. Hi there.
Okay, fine. Okay, Aqua, you can please show the next slide.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
You can show me the next slide, please.
Oh, sorry. Yes, the next slide.
Okay.
Okay,
this is a best way to explain Acquire. Okay, Acquire is a framework for ontology quality evaluation, which is based on a standard for software quality, which is ISO 25000. The idea is that Acquire has a quality model which is composed of this characteristic that you see here in the graph, for example, compatibility, transferability, reliability, maintainability, which are characteristics of Acquire. Each of characteristic is composed of a set of sub-characteristics. These two characteristics have been named during the summit as a criteria. It's, I think it is the same
mm-hmm.
as quality criteria. And each of these two characteristics could be, or criteria could be measured by one, two, or more metrics. The idea of Acquire is to have a more general model and try to get a standard for ontology quality evaluation. And in the document, in the Google Docs, there is a more specific explanation of the Acquire and each of these sub-characteristics or criteria have a definition that could be more easy to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to that for each of these sub-characteristics we could include the metrics from OPS or from OOPS or from AutoQA or
mm-hmm.
AutoClean, whatever, that could be measured that two characteristics. And for FIBO, the idea is to select from this quality model, what are the sub-characteristics useful for measure fiber ontologies?
Mm.
But any comments or?
Yes, I have a question about the operability qualities. Your hierarchy presumes a certain set of models of use, and on the operability stuff, I think this is repeated also in the document that you provided, which is very, both of which are very good. I didn't see where I could find the qualities that would reflect the use of the ontology where it's consumed by people. By way of example, learnability would be tremendously impacted if all of the annotations were in a language you didn't speak.
Do you talk about the language? The idea is that OCR is not a model for any specific language. The idea is that it's a general model. But that definition could be changed and could be dependent of the type of ontology, the language of the standard of the definition could be changed. That is the idea with the fiber.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think it's a very good thing that the tool is that flexible. But what I'm talking about is when you're applying the tool, if you're measuring the operability of a document that's supposed to communicate to people, and the annotations in the document aren't in a language that the people can comprehend, then learnability is low. But in looking at the model as you presented it in the paper, I didn't see where that human end of operability was really addressed.
I don't understand the question. Maybe you can short.
We'll take it offline.
Yeah, we can focus in on that as we work through the clinic, because I think that actually relates to a point about FIBO as a conceptual ontology, which I mentioned a few things about this earlier, but one of the ways in which we try to explain what a conceptual model and a conceptual ontology is that it has two audiences. One audience is the business stakeholders who have to validate it and own it and sign off on it, and the other is the implementers who have to implement some design against it. And in the case of ontologies, that implementer is often a machine, if you like. Yeah, you've got to apply technical constraints on an application before it's an operational ontology, but it's being consumed by a machine. So I think the point here is that you have operability criteria for machine consumption, but the human consumption of the ontology is every bit as important, particularly for a business conceptual model. So I think as we work through the practical part of this clinic, one of the things we will be doing is going through these criteria on this slide here and on the Google Doc that has been posted on that, and working out what needs to be added or what can be fine-tuned and so on to ensure that this framework or the framework derived from it covers all the quality criteria that we want to see in FIBO conceptual ontologies. So that's exactly the sort of thing that we will draw out as part of that process, is things like human facing, human readability, labels, graphics, and so on as part of the quality criteria that we want to be able to assess for FIBO, and particularly when people are building local extensions of FIBO internally, how do we ensure that what they're building is still a true conceptual model and still conforms with the requirements of FIBO for business readability and so on. So I'm sure we'll find ourselves adding or fine-tuning some of these criteria as part of today's hackathon session.
Mike, may I add a comment?
Please, yes, of course.
This is Amanda. I'm not an expert on OCR by any means, but have been looking at it a lot recently, and I recall that the descriptions of some of these components of the quality model make clear that they do have to be to some extent evaluated by experts, so that they're in the model, they can be referred to, but they are not fully automatically detectable. And I believe that there is, I'm actually trying to find it on the OCR wiki, which is linked from your session page.
Mm-hmm.
Learnability has identified metrics built in, but some of the things like appropriateness and recognizability, which I think speaks to what I think it was it Kevin who was speaking, was mentioning language and so forth, ease of use and helpfulness, those do not have associated OCR metrics. So I think that this is a place where the OCR model acknowledges or covers the fact that these are important things that need to be evaluated, but can't be evaluated by the tool by any recognizable machine mechanism at this moment.
Right.
Is that fair, Astrid? Or?
Yes, there is some characteristics that could be measured via automatically, and there is another characteristic which is not could be measured automatically, but for example, with maybe for example in here operability, learnability could be measured by LCOM and these metrics here. And we are make a software and we have an application which computes this characteristic. But for example, issue of use, there is no have associated metrics associated yet, and this is the idea. For example, if there is some metrics of oops that could be used for measure issue of use, mm-hmm. and the idea is to include it in this. In this OCR. And the idea that today is for FIBO subcharacteristics, which how the way for measure that FIBO subcharacteristics.
Thanks. And thanks, Amanda. I think that's a really good point, and welcome, by the way. I didn't say hi earlier. I think this is maybe a foretaste of where I see us going in the practical part of today after these introductory slides, is that there's a distinction between what are the quality criteria and then how are they assessed. Some of them are always going to have to be assessed manually. So when you're building a quality assurance framework or development methodology, typically in any software development, you have certain quality steps. And some of those are code reviews or meetings or other physical human activities. So there is always a distinction between what are the quality criteria and what are the quality criteria that can be automated. And those are two very different questions, both of which I think we should look at. So I'm hoping that we can first decide what it is we're looking to evaluate about any FIBO conceptual ontology, what we would not evaluate if it's an operational application constraint rather than a constraint on a business conceptual ontology, but also what criteria should apply to business conceptual ontology. We'll use this framework to address those kind of questions as to what kinds of things we want to look for. And then some of those might simply be addressed by running something up in Protégé. Some might be addressed by physical eyeballing of things, and some can be automated using the tools in Oquare, or the tools in Oops, or the tools in AutoQA. And so that way we could work out which of the things we need to do can be done with tools, and which of them therefore need to be done by people, so that, you know, we start with a full view of what are the things we want to evaluate rather than what are the things the tool can do. And then once we know what all the things are we want to evaluate, then we work out which of them there are tools for and how those tools can be used. And essentially we're then evaluating the tools against what it is we want them to tell us. Does that make sense to everyone?
Yes, it does.
Thank you. So, excellent. Thank you very much, Astrid. That was a really good foretaste of where we're going with today's thing. So, a few more slides and things just by way of setting things up, and then we'll work out what our approach is going to be today and how we carve up the time and so on. Basically, the ontologies that are involved, well, we've been working very hard. Some of you know the FIBO ontology, the Financial Industry Business Ontology, was developed using some of the basic concepts of OWL, particularly the concepts of classes and object properties and so on, but explained in plain English and presented to the business audience using diagrams that were actually derived from UML tooling. And so we didn't really have these in the RDFL format until very recently. Now that we're formally submitting this as a standard through the Object Management Group, and we're bringing it into line with some of the up-to-date standards that we use. So we used a UML profile called ODM, which allows you to create OWL models in UML tooling, but it, of course it doesn't turn them into operational OWL. But by using the most recent version of that, we've now, with a lot of assistance from particularly the folks at Fanatics, who are involved with the Object Management Group, we've got a small number of OWL ontologies reflecting the financial industry business ontology, i.e. the conceptual ontology. The current development process, the current set of standards that we're working to release to the Object Management Group is the FIBO business entities, and for that we have a set of foundational ontologies with basic concepts that are the semantic grounding, if you like, of the more industry-specific concepts, so basic legal concepts and accounting and basic organization concepts and so on, which we've got in a separate specification called FIBO Foundations. So we've been working very hard this week to get a sample of OWL ontologies sort of reflecting this FIBO material. And what we're bringing today is a number of conceptual ontologies from the FIBO Foundations specification. This is a very modular architecture. We've actually arranged everything in semantic namespaces like legal and accounting and so on, with sometimes two or three ontologies within each of those. So there's a lot of imports between ontologies. And of course, these are not yet published because they're part of what we're developing. So that's going to give us some interesting challenges on the web-based side of things. So we have OWL ontologies. That's the good news. They look good. They're in RDFL. They're, you know, part of what we're still developing for the upcoming OMG release. And that's what we'll be looking at today. We did originally consider having the operational ontologies as well, but it was felt that we should really focus on conceptual ontologies. But I would like to ensure that when we look at the quality framework, the Oquare table of criteria to look at, that we identify what are the quality criteria that could apply to operational ontologies as well. We really want to look at owl ontologies as a part of the FIBO business conceptual ontology set. That is the ones that are going to be the FIBO standard itself. So that's FIBO. I've said enough about FIBO already, and you'll see the ontologies. But the good news is we do actually have some owl ontologies, so I thought you'd be pleased to hear that. So there's a couple of considerations I want to quickly run through. I've mentioned some already, but I'll now go into a little bit more detail. Because these are developed as business conceptual ontologies, when we first produced them in OWL, a lot of people would put them straight into Protégé, this early version of this that we had last summer, and find all sorts of things that were not what you'd expect to find in an OWL application. And for some of those, there are good reasons. And one of the good reasons is that a conceptual model, by definition, should not reflect the constraints of an application. So we've not tried to model the ontologies using DL fake rules. We've not tried to model the ontology as if it was an application, because we're trying to capture the business meanings of any term that has a definition and that people understand as a term and need to deal with in the financial industry. Our initial remit was just to do that, and you know, we could have chosen to use something other than semantic technology, but it was obviously the obvious thing when you want to deal with the meaning of things is to use a good semantic modeling language to formalize those meanings. And so we have developed an ontology, a set of ontologies of terms and definitions and relationships and so on, which reflect all of the industry concepts that you may find in databases and messages and everything else across the financial industry. Initially, it's almost as a common industry terminology, but using as much of the formal semantics of OWL as we could sensibly use and present back to business domain experts. So that means we're really bringing together two distinct requirements in the models that we initially did. One was the requirement that it should be validated by business domain experts, and that meant that we had to be able to present that in diagrams and in spreadsheets that domain experts could understand without any formal training in semantic technology or UML modeling or, you know, Protégé or any other modeling, because even if you could train lots of business experts in those technologies, you're still relying on whether or not somebody's fully understood those. What you really need to do is present in as dialect-free as possible, and of course this is always a compromise, but present in boxes and lines, you know, simplified diagrams, in spreadsheets and so on, in language that you can confidently expect the business domain to understand, so that in turn you can confidently assume that if they say the model looks okay, then it looks okay. Now, of course, nobody's really achieved that, including us, but what we've done is we've used some UML tooling and using this ontology definition model, standard to use the flexibility of UML tooling to turn off all the UML syntactical indications and simply present boxes and lines and some upward pointing arrows for the taxonomic hierarchies, and basically present ontologies in diagrams that we could control and present to business domain experts, so that what we end up with is a reflection of the business consensus of what those terms mean and how they relate to each other and so on. The other thing that we're balancing against that is the need for an ontology to be logically consistent, to be well-formed semantically and so on. And I think that maybe some of the earlier ontologies, not the ones we're looking at now, but some of the ones we worked on in the early days, I'm sure we'll find lots of interesting things about the way the hours model, because what we could not do, because we're using UML tooling, was actually validate that as we went along. So the balance between using the expressive power of OWL to logically and formally tie down what are the meanings of things, balanced against the ability to present that to the business domain, is really what makes Fido. Now, of course, because we're talking business meaning, part of making things meaningful, meaning doesn't magically appear when you put something in RDF OWL. As you probably know, anybody can take a logical data model, transform it into OWL, and what you then have is a logical data model in OWL. You haven't changed the nature of the model by changing the syntax in which it's expressed. And so business meaning, as we see it, requires a high degree of abstraction of the concepts, so that for each thing, say, for example, a share, what kind of thing is a share? Well, this might be a publicly traded share, which is a kind of share, which is a kind of contract, which is a kind of thing. So we try and abstract as far as possible so that we define what are the necessary properties of things at the level of abstraction at which they apply. This is why I mentioned before that the whole question of abstraction applies all over again in conceptual models, just as it does in any design model. We've also partitioned the model to refine different kinds of concepts, like the definition of things in a role and the definition of context in which things can play roles and so on, which gives some clear formal meaning to a lot of terms that exist in the industry, but which may not necessarily correspond to operational instance data in an operational ontology. So terms like counterparty and issuer and underwriter and so on are all things in a role. You might not have data for a thing in a role, but it's a meaningful concept. So that's the sort of reason why the conceptual model has a lot more things in it than you would necessarily want in an operational ontology. We also, and this is one for the formal requirements, if it's not there on the table already, is the semantic grounding of concepts. So if each concept is defined in terms of its relationship to other concepts, just as you would see in a semantic network, for example, such as the brain, if every term has its meaning by virtue of its relationship to other terms, where does the meaning get in? Well, where it gets in is what we call grounding. This is what is the ultimate set of axioms that are foundational to the model, and that the meanings of everything else are built up from. And for the meanings of things in the financial world, particularly securities, derivative transactions, legal entities, and so on, a lot of that is terms that are grounded in law. So the further down we can get in terms of defining what the meanings of things are is down to basic legal concepts. Similarly, there are basic accounting concepts that are foundational to some of the concepts that we have to deal with, such as equity and debt and interest and so on. And so, as we see it, the key to meaning is reducing everything down to the most atomic meaningful concepts that are grounded in some well-attested body of law or accounting or other business practice like that. And that's what makes the model meaningful. The syntax doesn't do that for you. Now, those are some of the requirements. Now, in creating that balance of being able to formally model things and yet present them to business experts, there are a couple of compromises we had to make, some of which we may not necessarily need to make in the future if and when there are better ways of visualizing certain ontology constructs and presenting them to a business audience. So we used a small subset of our concepts that we could confidently present to a business audience in the tooling that we had available, which was the UML tooling. Now that we're moving these ontologies to RDF OWL, of course RDF OWL has even less tooling that you would present to business experts, but it is very much a growth area to find better ways of visually presenting things we couldn't currently do, such as property restrictions. So one of the things that when an OWL expert first looks at one of our ontologies in an ontology tool, they see that there's a lot of object properties, each of which has only one domain and one range, and a lot of sub-property relationships, because that is something that we've been able to present to the business in terms of boxes and lines. Each property is a line between two boxes, each box is a kind of class, and we can even show little attachments to those lines that allow us to show the sub-property relationship, so we can explain to people that where an equity confers voting rights on a holder, so a share confers, sorry, a contract confers rights, and that the relationship that share confers voting rights is a sub-property of the relationship contract confers rights. And so we've been able to use that pattern of having a large number of object properties, each used once, and a lot of sub-property relationships, as a way of deriving business facing diagrams that are easy to explain. But an owl person would look at that and say, well, surely you should just have one property and use property restrictions. So that's the sort of thing which we couldn't do that. There's no way of explaining, let alone presenting, the concept of property restrictions to a non-modeling audience. And so if we were to try and do that, we would immediately be presenting diagrams that we would not be confident were being validated by those business domain experts, because we'd now be asking them to think like modelers rather than think like traders or risk managers or whatever they do in their day-to-day work. So there's those kinds of compromises which we've had to make to get the business SME view. And some of those we may be able to improve upon the conceptual ontology once there are better ways of visually presenting such material, so that perhaps we can have more of this kind of information in the conceptual ontology without necessarily cluttering the business view, and maybe having levels of detail that can be shown to people and so on. That's all in the future. But the point from an ontology evaluation point of view is there are some things which you would expect to see in an operational OWL ontology for a reasoning application, which you should not expect to see in a conceptual model, such as DL safe or other constraints of any sort. The keyword there is constraints. But there are also some things that you would want to see in a business conceptual model that you won't see in FIBO, often for good reasons to do with the way that we've been presenting this to the business audience. What would be useful from a quality assessment point of view is to capture what some of those things are, so that at some point in the future, when there are better ways of presenting visualizations of these ontologies to a business audience, we can then use these things as a checklist to say, in that case, we can now we can actually improve upon the conceptual ontology without compromising its ability to be presented to business. And so that's something I'm very interested in, is what are the criteria that should be applied to a conceptual ontology, what are the criteria that would never be applied to a conceptual ontology, and what are the things that we can look for now and which we may not fix right now for good reasons, but would be a good checklist of things that we can improve upon in the future in these conceptual ontologies. So that's where it's going to be quite interesting, I think. There's other things like that. You know, we didn't define whether object properties are functional or not, whether they're symmetric and so on, that kind of thing, because again, there was no way of presenting that to the business. That wouldn't stop us putting it in the ontology, and perhaps something like Ops will find things like that and give us a nice checklist of things that can be improved upon that would not compromise the nature of the model as a conceptual ontology. Then we have operational ontologies. That's any ontology that's derived from a FIBO standard, conceptual ontology, and optimized for use in a reasoning or semantic querying application. Now, some of those, the semantic querying, for example, may well be a set of nearly all the terms that are in the conceptual ontology, because you're querying across different databases with different meaningful concepts in them and so on. Others will be reasoning-based applications where you want the thing to run in sensible time. You want to apply application constraints to that. And so, again, it would be nice to work out what are the quality criteria that should be applied to those operational ontologies. And other criteria that also apply to those, of course, is how do we ensure that a given ontology does reflect the business semantics and the business conceptual ontology, how it's dealt with the compromises that we made in the conceptual ontology that should not be in the operational ontology, such as property restrictions and so on. Yes, Kevin.
This is Jacobus. One question. Would it be possible for you to, because if you use an agile approach to this, mm-hmm. and you can describe the requirements of the users of the business in terms of user stories, would it be possible to do that, to have a list of the user stories of the kinds of things that you need to be able to query from the FIBO ontologies, and then would it then be possible to translate those user stories into Sparkle queries that we can then run against the FIBO ontologies to ensure that they do exactly what we want them to do for the business? And by having those, that would be, we would have eventually have maybe a couple of hundred little Sparkle queries that would then, you could then continuously use those Sparkle queries to run them against the FIBO ontologies as they develop and ensure their quality in that way. It's like black box testing. This is what the approach I use myself in my own project. And I think, I mean, it sounds maybe very operational and very low level, but I would say if you can express your user stories in terms of Sparkle, then in that way you can ensure the quality of your ontologies in a very high level, I think.
Yeah, that's a wonderful idea. I think sort of like a regression testing, when you have a set of test scripts and you run regression tests on each future version of the thing, you'd have a set of Sparkle queries as the equivalent of test scripts, which, as you say, is a classic black box testing scenario. Yeah, that is a wonderful idea.
Could you capture that thought into the chat? Because, I mean, that's
I did, actually. I did already. Yeah.
Oh, you did? Good.
But no one reads it.
Oh. Not the guys meeting chat, but the...
The academic one, yeah.
Yes, which is wonderful. I can't see that because I'm presenting slides at the moment. I've got one screen rather than two. I normally operate with two screens when I'm on the road at the moment. So,
but it's a discipline that you use in programming as well. I mean, everyone uses test-driven development now, and you could do the same discipline with OWL as well. As soon as you, and especially if you use a central repository like a GitHub repository to check in your changes, so you can have multiple people working on the same ontology, and then you have a Jenkins server running all your Sparkle queries continuously as soon as a change happens, and you get slapped on the wrist as soon as one of your Sparkle queries is failing. And so you ensure that every change is always passing all the tests before you make are allowed to check it into to the central repository.
Mm.
And I'm using the same approach for because if you use Protégé or Toprate, then you have an OWL file locally in a GitHub clone, and then you make changes, you check them into the central GitHub repository, and a remote Jenkins server will then run your tests. That works perfectly. I don't use tools like Oops yet, but I do use tools to run all my Sparkle queries against my ontologies, and that gives me some level of quality at least.
Fantastic. Yes, and in fact, even if you're not using Agile, whatever methodology you're using, you need that concept of a sort of standard set of regression test scripts, or in this case, Sparkle queries. I've never thought of that.
That goes back to Bertrand Meyer's work with Eiffel and contract-driven development. It's been around forever.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same concept. And this would especially work well if you also define the individuals in your class, in your OWL file. So not just classes. Because that makes it very hard to make Sparkle queries. You can create owl classes, but you, if you would make individuals, then these pocket feeders really make sense for the business as well.
So you actually need a set of test individuals as part of your regression test framework. You have a set of imaginary individuals like, you know, any bank, PLC, and so on, along with a set of standard Sparkle queries, and that becomes your standard regression test. And yes, when you come to an agile process where the development is driven from user scenarios back through tests in that way, that fits in very well. But it also fits in a more conventional, you know, top-down type of development, because you always have a sort of test stage where you want to be able to apply and reapply tests in any methodology. So,
You can also generate documentation with every new change. You generate a new documentation, like I did with this this tool I showed in September. You can generate all the graphics from the latest and greatest version that you have checked in into your repository. So these, and but also those individuals don't necessarily have to be real operational objects. They can be just instances of abstract classes even. So you could say I have an account, just a bank account, for example, but not a specific account, and that I have that bank account as an abstract individual in my same alpha, in the same alpha as the class, and I can then just run a Sparkle query against it to just test that abstract concept.
That's very useful. So you don't have to have individuals that are real world individuals. You could have individual of what would be an abstraction.
Yes.
Of course, there's no abstract classes in OWL as such, because the instance is still a member of the set that is the abstraction. But it's it means you don't have to go right down to the leaf level of your taxonomy. And the other thing that just occurred to me thinking about that, and this is one maybe to come back to later, but I mentioned that we have these slightly philosophical partitions in our ontology, like, you know, things in a role, like issuers and counterparties and so on. We introduce those because they are meaningful concepts and therefore have terms and definitions for them which we needed to capture for the full semantics. But a lot of people look at them and go, oh, but there's no instance data for that. Well, of course there isn't. Although they may correspond to possibly join tables in some databases and reified relationships in some ontologies and so on, and they are certainly useful, but they may not necessarily have a place in an operational ontology. But that sounds to me like, again, for this kind of Sparkle-based regression testing, that we could create dummy instances of those kind of relative things to test out stuff across those partitions as well, even though that may not correspond to operational data.
And on top of that, those test individuals of those abstract concepts can then also be used to generate graphics. And those graphics would be much more exploratory than the abstract class models. So you can use instance diagrams instead of class diagrams to talk to the business.
Yes, because getting, particularly when you want the business to be able to drill down to, you look at some of our models. I was looking at the bond pricing and analytics the other day, and the private label versus, what's the other one, agency mortgage-backed securities. And those models are very, very huge and ugly. And that's all business complexity. It's not technical complexity. And how you present that to the business is a real challenge in any diagramming framework, any modeling framework. But being able to present that at higher levels of abstraction so people can drill down, and I think actually part of the quality requirements of FIDO is the ability to create diagrams and views that the business can comprehend. So this comes back to the earlier point about the operability versus learnability in the Acquire framework. So it's going to be interesting to fit these kind of requirements into that framework, which itself is developed from a thing called the Square framework, which is a broader engineering framework of requirements. So hopefully we can fit all these kinds of requirements into that framework somewhere. So that's a really good idea to be focusing in on during today. So,
one comment, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
in the interest of time, you have another 20 minutes to this session.
Yep.
Maybe we can stretch that by another 10 minutes or so, but it's still, I mean, just half an hour or max. Mm-hmm. Some of the people we have invited to your expert panel who are here, like Todd or possibly Amanda, Mike Dean, and then project, and I need to move on to the back kickoff. So you might want to use the next 20 or 30 minutes to maybe leverage on the presence of those people as well as to map out how to get your deliverables in place for the rest of the day, who will be here, who won't, and so on.
Yeah. Thanks, Peter. That's great. I think that was a useful aside to give us a sense of where we're going, but we have 20 minutes now in which to try and firm up how we're actually going to do all of this today. Now that I think we've all got a flavour of who everybody is, what we've brought to the table, what we're trying to do, and so on. So I'm very quickly going to jump through the next couple of slides and just try and bring it all together in terms of how we structure our day, so or our night, as one of you. So our objective is to take some of the ontologies that we've produced and look at some of these example quality tools and frameworks and metrics and see how those apply to the five business conceptual ontologies. We've actually got a set of ontologies from the foundations. We haven't got the business entities ones yet, but we've got a good number of ontologies in the FIBO foundations, which we can apply those measures to and see how they look, and figure out how this will become part of a formal methodology for FIBO development along the lines that we've just been discussing and thinking about. So basically, that's what we want to get out of this, is the elements of some formal methodology for FIBO itself as a set of standards for the industry, and also for how people can use and extend FIBO locally. We've heard some interesting ideas where people are already extending FIBO and using SCOS and things as well, and also defining some notes and things for those who are deriving operational ontologies, and getting a sense of which of these tools can be used where in the thing. So basically what we want to do is go through, I think the first thing to do is go through the OCLAIR framework, the SECI criteria, and also hear from our industry folks what are the criteria they want to see in a conceptual ontology, and then we'll run up the OCLAIR and onto QA tools and run these ontologies through them and evaluate how those tools can be applied as part of the quality control of FIBO. But more importantly to me, how we can define what all the quality criteria are, which of them can be met by simple protege, by, as we've heard, a set of Sparkle queries, which of them can be met by UX, which of them can be met by OCLAIR and onto QA and other tools that are there and so on. So that's kind of it really in terms of the formal thing. This is the first step in the development of our methodology for our standards. And so we do hope that from today we can take away tools and techniques that we can use as part of our formal process going forward, and that we will actually frame our development life cycle and our methodology on how we use those tools and techniques. That's really just an idea of what everything was. I would like to hear more from particularly our experts from Ontolog, Todd and Amanda and Mike and any others that I may have missed, as to any pointers you have for us, and then I think I'd like to think about how we structure our day, how long people have got, and so on. So, let's think. Amanda, Todd, Mike, any thoughts, any things we should be thinking of that I've missed, or any suggestions for us? I think you're on the right track.
This is Amanda. Let me just say, it sounds like you're on the right track to me. A lot of good considerations have been brought up during this discussion this morning. Just to let you know, I will drop off at the end of this session, but if I'm going to be around working on my taxes today, so would like to me to come back and help out at some point, you know, from particular places, I'm available to do that. I just can't stay on in with the workshop all day.
Right, wonderful. Thanks for that. I'll ping you on Skype or something if we need you. But we'll always need you. So. I see you guys have been busy in the chat room, which I haven't been looking at while I've been presenting slides. So that's interesting. Anybody else got any pointers for us before we talk schedules and times and how we're going to structure this? Okay. So looking at some of the questions in the chat and trying to get a sense of the Acquire framework versus individual tools, and I see that Acquire has tools as well. Oops is a tool, of course. Also QA, I believe, has tools as well. And do you all jump in if you think we could do this differently, that we've seen a good checklist or framework for ontology considerations from Acquire, and what I'd like to arrive at is a list of quality requirements for FIBO without prejudice to which tools or whether they can be automated or not. What are the things we want to know about a FIBO business conceptual ontology, and then what's the tools that can help us know that, and then let's run up the tools. Now, that could take some time, and I'm conscious that some of you are on the east side of the Atlantic, and so we don't want to be working you through the night, but I'd like to chunk things up so that we start by going through the framework. Perhaps we should start with a green field, kind of blank sheet brainstorming to see if we pick up stuff that we wouldn't see by going through the tables. I don't know. Interested in people's thoughts on that. So I'd like to go through those tables to find what is or isn't applicable to FIBO, particularly from the point of view of our FIBO stakeholders here, so that things that I've been saying may or may not be true. What matters is what the real users in the banks actually think. So I'd like to get a consensus on that and then start looking at the tools. We may have some interesting technical challenges as to how to use online tools with ontologies that exist in an offline zip file. There'll be some interesting challenges around that, which we need to work with as well. So that's why I haven't tried to structure this beyond just that general idea that we'll start with the framework. We have a Google document with that material in it. Maybe we can use this Google document to work through on screen using GoToMeeting and make this the FIBO framework or something. So that's really my thinking. This is really your session, everybody. This is, we want to find the best way of making use of everybody's time to identify these quality criteria and run these tools. I have the ontologies in a little zip file on my disk. We'll need to put those somewhere or send them to people and run them up in the tools and so on and get our hands dirty with a nice bit of hackathon activity. So, that's where we are. In terms of timing, how do people want to divide up the time and how long have people got? I'm thinking particularly over in Spain, for example, what sort of time it is now. It's about 4:30, 5:30 in the afternoon, isn't it? So perhaps what we should do is at the end of this kickoff session, take a 10-minute break and then start in on this Claire framework. Maybe we should time box this, give ourselves an hour, see where we are at the end of that hour, take another 5-minute break, then do an hour of intensive tool-based work or something like that. I'm really flexible. I don't know how, you know, what's going to work best, so I'm open to what people think will work.
You might want to check with Maria first. She has to get back to the integration project.
Oh, of course, yes. Yes, Maria, what's your timings in terms of, I know you're working on several projects at once today, aren't you? So you mentioned earlier. So what would be sort of work for you in terms of when we can look at the UPS tool and load up some ontologies into it and look at the kind of results that we get?
Well, if I have understood correctly, it's like you have a bunch of ontologies and it should run UPS against the ontologies and then give you the results.
Excellent.
Is that? Yeah. In, I don't know, in a Google Doc or something, or I don't know the format. But the thing is, how many ontologies do you have?
Right, let me have a look. We have the zip file here. I have the Foundations ontologies. Within that, we have several namespace packages. So we have 9 packages. Most of those contain one or two individual ontologies. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's probably about 7. It's probably about 15 or 20 of these, 8, 9.
Okay, and they are not online?
No.
No, you have to share with us these files, I guess.
Yes, I think so.
And do you need to keep the hierarchy of the folders, or you can make this one .rar or .zip and share it via Dropbox, maybe, or something?
I can make one suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, if you redo this zip but put a password on it, then we could upload to the Ontolog WebDev file shares, and then people can download, and you just verbally give everyone here in this group the password. Then they could unzip locally and work on them.
Right. Does it need to have a password? And to Maria's question, it doesn't have to be in this structure. We structured the namespaces to reflect these intermediate modules, but of course that concept doesn't exist in OWL, so the imports between them are defined separately from any hierarchy. So if it's easier for me to do them as a flat structure, I could do that. Would that be helpful?
Yeah, maybe if I have to write a script to run all the ontologies in one folder, might be helpful. But I don't know if something could happen with the imports, as you said, because I don't know if I can resolve the imports.
Right. Well, the imports don't depend on this folder structure, but let me show you what we have. So if I open up, say, statute.owl. And these are all quite small. They're very modular. I'm just opening this up in Notepad++. So the imports are done by the namespace, so that's the namespace of this ontology. Where's the import? Here we are. So the import's all done by the URI, but these ontologies do not exist at those URIs.
Then the imports are not going to be resolved.
Right, that's correct. Now, is that going to...
So you can do this in Prodigy. If you have a location mapping file, you can have a mapping file in the root directory that maps all these URLs to the physical locations in your local directory.
Ah.
So you don't necessarily have to put them all in one file. But then you can open the whole group of files in Prodigy as one whole.
Yeah, the thing is, that works for Prodigy, but I'm not sure if that will work for Oops.
Right.
And it's based on Jenna? Because it's
yes.
Jenna.
Yes, that's Jenna loop for the import within the local...
But if Jenna sees the location mapping file, then it will work.
Okay, I didn't know if they do it separately from Jenna. Okay, good to know, thank you.
Right, so that's something we're going to have to resolve when we run this through Oops. So I think the question from a timing point of view, because Maria, your time is split between several people, we can do the physical Oops evaluation earlier and then go through the quality criteria, or we can do it the way around I suggested and go through the quality criteria first and then look at the tools. I think we can do either, so we should sit around what works from the point of view of your time. But when's best for you? If we pick, say, a slot of an hour or something where we work with you on the Oops thing during the course of today, then what sort of time is good for you?
I'd rather to do it as soon as possible, because now in the other project they are working in the API definition, and I'm not really involved in that. So I just need to be aware of the chat in case the developers of the other project need me. But like right now, I'm a bit free in the other project, so I'd rather to take advantage now of this time.
Right, okay, good. So then I think we should do that, is that we can, if everybody else, and Astrid, does that work for you if we do the Oops test first and then we come on to the Eclair table after that? Does that work for you? I know it's quite late where you are as well. Good. So, right, so we have 5 minutes of this kickoff session. Then I suggest a 5 minute coffee break, because it's six in the morning here when I started, and I haven't had my coffee yet. I think we're starting to have a plan then. So we'll start after the break, we'll start with Maria and the Oops tool. I will, during the break, zip up these files again into a flat directory, and then Jacobus or someone can explain what this mapping file is and how to do one, and we can start to make that happen. Or we can just look at the ontologies individually without their input for the time being and see what the Oops tool shows us, and that will give us a nice idea of what we could do. How does that sound as a plan?
It sounds good. Would you need me to help upload the file, or you could, after you set it up, you can maybe email or do whatever, actually?
Okay, what's easiest? Because I have access to the wiki. If I can save you time by doing anything on the wiki, just let me know.
It's the web dev server. If you have a web dev client and are familiar with the upload to the web dev server, then it would be easy. Otherwise, just
you can also upload files in this in the chats window, I think.
Right. Okay, you can upload on the chat too, as well, and the files.
I haven't got the web dev service because I don't know what one was. So
use the
files in the chat. Right, wonderful. So I'll, is there a size limit on that?
I don't know. We have only used it once or twice.
These are quite small ontologies, so we're not doing credit default swaps or bond pricing today, so we should be in luck.
Okay, in case you need my help and I'm not around, then put it on the chat. I'll try to watch the chat every now and then or drop me an email.
Wonderful. Thanks, Peter. I really appreciate that. And thanks for putting all this together. Good.
Okay, so maybe we could end this kickoff call now, and you guys resume in 15 minutes, right?
Yes.
All on the GoToMeeting, including voice.
That's correct. Yes, that's correct. And the voice details for GoToMeeting are in the link where it says GoToMeeting at the top of the page for today. Yes, that has phone numbers for those of you that can't use voice over IP, but please use voice over IP if you can. I'll keep this GoToMeeting session open. After we've come back from our break, where you've clicked on telephone, you'll need to click on mic and speakers, or use a telephone with one of these numbers, and we'll see you there. Any other comments before we close this line?
Mike and Pot are still around. It'd be nice to hear something. Maybe they dropped off.
I'm sure they're multitasking. Yes, yes. Excellent. Okay, thanks, Peter, and thanks, everyone. And we'll reconvene in 15 minutes at the top of whatever this coming hour is known as in your part of the world. I'll keep the open meeting open. We start the conversation there, and we'll be working with the OOPS, Maria, and we'll be looking at the OOPS tool. I will upload that file in the meantime, and we'll take it from there. So thank you all very much for participating in this introductory session, and I look forward to seeing you in 15 minutes as we roll our sleeves up and start doing the work for real. And thanks again, Peter, for everything.
Okay. Good.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Have a nice day.